In this episode of Startups to the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about building a killer email launch sequence. This is Startups to the Rest of Us, episode 325. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, sir?
Well, I'm doing some ongoing work to polish up my Zapier integration, and it turned out to be a lot more troublesome than I had originally expected. So there's certain requirements they have about data that they expect back. So I had to go in and make a bunch more changes on top of the ones I already made to my API, and their documentation isn't very clear on some of the things that you need to do. Like, it's technically correct, and I talked to somebody over there about this. I said, it's technically correct, but not very helpful.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I think I mentioned last time, because did you mention this last week you were working on it?
Yeah.
Early on, we ran into, especially getting our V1 Zapier integration, we ran into some struggles with it, which was surprising because since they have so many people integrating with them, I would think it'd be a more of a well-honed process. I know that when we've done the V2, and I think we may even have a V3 out now, it got easier. There's still some tricky areas, but overall, once you have something that works, it's a lot easier to iterate on that.
Yeah, I think the issue is just when you go in, you don't even have a baseline. And so you've done things your own way. So you have your own, you know, like a way of interfacing with the world. And it doesn't necessarily match up with what their expectation is for your way of interfacing with the world or with all the different APIs. So they essentially set the standard that everybody else kind of has to follow at this point. So
right. Yep. Cool. My end, we are hiring two more developers at Drip. Front end and a Ruby developer. So that's always fun, kind of ramping up those efforts. It's a lot of, as you know, it's very time consuming to find good people. So I think we'll be pretty much constantly hiring this throughout this year, just with the trial and the customer growth. You know, since Lead Pages acquired us, we just have more and more needs to scale and to build more features and just everything that comes with it. I used to marvel, you know, I don't understand how these teams get so big. Why do you need 15 people to run a software product? Why do you need 20 people? But I see it now. Like, I see just that you just get so many systems. And then when you're growing at double-digit percentage every month, those systems every 4 to 6 months, they run out of capacity, you know, whether it's a database or whether it's a queue or whether it's whatever it is, that code is not built, you know, to basically double in usage every whatever it is, 6 months. And so you have to circle back. And that circling back in the early days, there's almost none of it, right? So you're just doing features. But as you start to have to circle back to all these systems that you're deploying and maintaining, we're finding that we need a full-time developer on just, you know, one subsystem now just to keep it going. And that's not even really improving it that much. It's just to keep up with kind of the needs of the customer base as it grows.
Yeah, I was going to point out that like there gets to a point where some of the just different subsystems almost need somebody full time to work on just that. And those pieces get complicated. And as they get more complicated, it makes it more difficult to move from one subsystem to another, but just because it is so complicated and it takes you so long to get back to a base level of understanding of, okay, how did we write this? And what were the different edge cases that we ran into so that when I'm making changes to it, I don't break other things. And having that one person who's kind of responsible for that one piece of it makes things a lot easier because then you don't have to do that context switching all the time.
Yeah, totally. Other thing on my radar is Sherry and I are heading to Los Angeles this weekend for just a quick getaway. I'm literally leaving Friday. I think my plane leaves at 5 or something. And then we're back by Sunday afternoon. It's just so cool to be in a city, like we live in Minneapolis, and we're 20 minutes from a major airport, and it's a nonstop flight, less than 4 hours to LA from here. It's crazy to have that flexibility. And I think it was like $200. It was like $210 to do it. I've really enjoyed that part about being in a larger city, you know, because Fresno, it was always a hop. Basically, you always had to stop somewhere. And that stop just adds complexity, like your luggage gets lost more often. That stop always takes an hour or 2 hours. And there's just so much that can go wrong and you're up and down and you're just doing all this stuff. And I find that like a nonstop flight now, that's what I strive for. So the fact I would never do like 6 or 8 hour travel day, which is like to get from Fresno to Minneapolis is like 7 hours or something because it's not nonstop. But I would never do that for a weekend, right? Because then you lose Sunday and you lose all day Friday. But in this case, I can get there, especially with the time change, like around dinner time or a little later on Friday. And then we head back early afternoon on Sunday, and I'm just kind of marveling at kind of the time efficiency of that.
You know, I just looked it up while you were talking, and the temperature difference between Minneapolis and Los Angeles is about 20 degrees. So that's about $10 per $10 per degree.
Well, what's weird?
You can Minneapolis, just use your heater.
I know. No, we're not going for the, to be honest, we're going, there's a friend's birthday party and we're hanging out with a bunch of people in Redondo Beach. It's going to be a blast. But Minneapolis has had the polar vortex is coming through. So we've been like sub-zero temperature, or like 5 degrees has been the high. And all the, during that time, LA is basically, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And then we go to show up, and suddenly this week, Minneapolis is all in the 30s and 40s, which is crazy for this time of year. And yeah, LA is between in the 50s and 60s. It's like they're meeting in the middle. It's not the right week to go, but I guess we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, just turn the heat up a little bit, but whatever.
Yeah, that's what I should do. I know. So, hey, today's episode, it's about building a killer email launch sequence. And it was prompted by an email sent to us by JP Boiley at metrics.watch. That's their website. And he says, "Hey guys, love the show, all the good stuff you put out there. I'm about to launch a new product in about 2 or 3 weeks, and I want to have a great launch. I have some things planned, but I fear I might miss some of the basics and really want to get it as right as possible. Do you have any resources to suggest on how to successfully launch and what a launch sequence might look like in 2017? The tool we're launching is the third product of my business, Metrics Watch, which is email reports and real-time alerts for Google Analytics. And the next one is a freemium tool that scans Google Analytics accounts and tells people if they have spam or fake traffic in Google Analytics and how to fix it." So thanks for the question, JP. We're going to take the next 20 or 30 minutes to talk through how we would craft a launch sequence. And this is based on experience launching, you know, between the two of us, books, software products, SaaS apps, info products, Micropreneur Academy, Founder Cafe, right, which are online membership model. So really kind of the gamut.
MicroConf too.
MicroConf as well, right? Yeah, we have a launch sequence there. So an in-person event as well. So we've done this a lot, and there are obviously a lot of different ways to do it, but I want to put out kind of maybe a concrete framework that shows like step by step, if you just want to take this and run with it, go do that. And we also want to talk through like how we think about it and why we get to this conclusion of these are the emails we send on which days. I also covered this in my book, Start Small, Stay Small, in quite a bit of detail, a little different conclusion than I come to here, because it was what, 5-6 years ago that I published that, and some things have changed. So I think that the best way to kind of get a sense of how to do a launch sequence is to basically get on someone else's launch list and see how it feels to receive the quantity and the tone and the style of their emails. One example is a friend of mine a couple months ago did a launch for kind of a training product, and I was on his list, and it was like irritating as hell. Like it was a really overbearing launch, and it was very much not in line with his personality. It was odd. I could tell he didn't write the copy. It wasn't in his voice. There were way too many emails. He was just hammering us. And if you're not on the receiving end of those and you're just sending them, you don't know how it feels. And so I think getting on a couple launch sequences from some people and seeing like, oh, I liked the feel of this, or I didn't like the feel of that, can help you decide like, you know, what feels right to you and what feels like it is in your voice and what feels like it is probably the right approach within the guidelines we're going to lay out today. Because we're going to give some ranges here, right? Like you can send 2 emails, you can send 10 emails, but which one's right? Well, you know, a lot of it depends on your own personal taste and your relationship with your audience.
One thing to mention about places you can find products to get onto the different launch sequences, because that might be an initial hang up that you have, like how do I find some of those products where they have a launch sequence going? I would head over to Product Hunt to start out with, and then from there you should be able to find a bunch of different products that people are launching. And I would sign up for several of them, not just one or two, because you're very likely to find some that where they don't have a very good launch sequence, or they just don't even have one. It's this, they just basically put the product out there and they get a bunch of signups on their page, but they don't necessarily follow up with them and follow through with a full-blown launch sequence. So you'll probably have to try out a handful of them. I would probably say between 6 and 12 of them. And then what you could do is you can take those, throw them into like a folder, use it as essentially a swipe file, and look through to see how they go through the process of pitching the product or the offering that they have. Other thing you can do is you can go out to, I'll say, some rather well-known entrepreneurs in the software space and identify what products they have available and get onto their email list. Another option is looking specifically for book authors or information or training products authors. So those tend to be dialed in pretty well. Obviously, they're not perfect, but there's a lot of different people who are doing those types of things. So those are places you can start to find examples of what you can do that are very specific to a particular product, as opposed to talking about it generally, which is what we're going to do.
And my first exposure to, you know, a lot of this talk around launch sequences was Jeff Walker's product launch formula. And I never actually bought that. It was like $2,000. And it was at a time where that just wasn't worth it to me. But in essence, he lays a bunch of stuff out anyways. And so I kind of took the model that he laid out in his free content and used it to develop early launch sequences for different products I was launching, and then have slowly adapted those over time based on the audience and the product I was launching. In essence, what he talks about is doing something called a sideways sales letter. And a lot of folks do this these days, but it's still really effective. And the concept of a sales letter, if you haven't heard that, in essence, if you think of like a long form homepage where it's really just text, it's almost like a big long essay or a blog post. The point of the letter is to, essentially show you the value of the product and get someone to click the buy now button. And there are ways to write really good sales letters. I would say that the old Drip homepage, if you look back in archive.org, maybe 6 months ago, that was a really solid SaaS sales letter. I spent a lot of time crafting it. It got good results. It made a statement. It used a lot of you words, it talked to the reader. And then you can write really kind of crappy, cheesy internet marketing ones. And those I'm sure you can find on ClickBank or something like that. But they're really kind of six components to a sales letter. The first is the opener, and you want something really good, right? Really engaging, because otherwise someone's not going to keep reading. Then you want to identify the problem. And during this time, you're using a lot of you language. You're talking directly to the reader saying, you're a developer, you feel this, but you want to launch a product, but you don't know how, you're kind of putting words in their mouth. And if they're not that person, then they're going to leave. But if they are, it's going to captivate and they're going to feel like, whoa, this person's talking exactly to me. And then you present the solution, right? And that's the thing you're selling. And then you want to, add on social proof. You have a money back guarantee. That's the fourth element. The fifth is essentially the stick. And this is up to you, but it's the penalty if you don't do this. If you don't do this, you're just going to be circling around, never launch your product. You're never going to learn how to market or whatever. And then the sixth is in essence the close. You ask for the sale. And so that's what the elements, and they can be in different orders and there's different variations of them, but those are the fundamental kind of six areas of a sales letter. If you want more information on that, I would go read Dan Kennedy's Ultimate Sales Letter. It's available in Kindle and print. It's probably the first book I read on sales letters. And as much as I don't like a lot of Dan Kennedy's teachings, I think he crosses the line in terms of I don't know what you call it. He's just really he's old school internet marketing in a way that is really irritating to me. But with that said, this book is a really good overview of how to write a sales letter and kind of the components that you should think about and the ways to write them.
And to talk a little bit more about the sales letter itself, or just keep in mind that the entire intent of the sales letter is to help move somebody from where they are today into a position where they're going to take that next step and become a customer. So that's the whole purpose of the sales letter. And you can do that in different ways. As Rob said, you can move things out of order. You can change, for example, like you're presenting the solution and, social proof and guarantee, like you can change up the order of some of those things a little bit, or you can mix and mash them a little bit. So you can say, here's the problem and here's the solution. And then you can put some social proof in there, and then you can provide a little bit of a stick or a penalty and say, this is what will happen if you don't. And then you kind of alternate back and you go back to the solution and say, and by the way, this other problem over here is also taken care of. So you don't have to go directly in that order. But again, the purpose of those is really just to help somebody move their mindset from one place to another.
That's a good point. And circling back to Jeff Walker, again, he has this product launch formula and it's about writing a sideways sales letter. So it's taking a sales letter, and instead of having it be this long thing of text, you basically just break it up and you send it out over time, right? So you might send kind of the first two sections in the first email and the second two and the next one. And you don't do that exactly, but you get the idea that each email has a particular point during the launch, and you're basically covering these same topics. You need an opener, you identify the problem, you present the solution, you have social proof and a guarantee, perhaps a stick, and then you have a close, and you just do those, in a sequence of emails, however you break it up. And, in my experience, the optimal number of emails is between 3 and 7 over the course of sometimes 1, sometimes 2 weeks. That's how I think about it. I personally tend towards 5 email launches, meaning that the launch has 5 emails in it, but it depends on how much your list loves you and how much of a pain in the butt you want to be. To be honest, the more emails you send during a launch, almost without exception, the more sales you will make. But the trade-off is that the more emails you send, the more unsubscribes, and then ultimately complaints you will receive. So you have to find that balance, again, depending on your niche, like stock picking sites. They send a ton of email. I mean, I have 9, 10, 11 emails during a long, I mean, just crazy volume, twice a day, all that stuff. Versus if you're selling to developers, you send twice a day, you're going to get a lot of, you're going to get people starting to mark stuff as spam. And so you have to figure out, you know, the relationship you have with your audience, as well as the niche you're in. And that's why I give that range of like 3 to 7. I think if you're not sending 3, you're probably not sending enough. And when you start creeping up into the 6, 7, 8 range, like you better have some really good content that you're sending out, or else people are going to bail.
The other thing to keep in mind is the timeline has a lot to do with that. So we're, you know, Rob is just talking there about 3 to 7 over the course of a week. But if you're going to start putting yourself in front of people, let's say 2 weeks out or 3 weeks out or 5 weeks out, you have a lot more flexibility to start sending more emails because there's more space in between them, or potentially more space in between them. But as you get closer to that launch date, you're probably going to want to ramp them up. So instead of sending one a week, for example, for 3 or 4 weeks, then you would start sending one every couple of days. And it's really that last week where you'd send that 3 to 7 emails in an effort to get up to the point where you're building that anticipation. And that's part of what these emails are about, is it's about building the anticipation for the product launch. And the people who are interested in it are going to be looking forward to those emails. But as Rob said, there are people who are going to be turned off by it or not ready yet, or they're not in a position where they can take advantage of it. And if you start inundating those people with those emails, they will walk away. They will unsubscribe. So it is a balancing act. And sometimes you can balance that out by giving them an option and saying, hey, if you're not ready right now, just click here and we'll follow up with you in like 3 or 4 months. So you can sort of head those things off, but at the same time, you don't want to put too many things on your plate if you don't have time to start implementing those things or trying to think of ways to handle too many edge cases. It really depends on the size of your list and what it is that you're going for.
So in terms of your overall launch, a good launch has some type of reward that you're able to offer that people won't get at another time. So like some epic course you've created, you know, a sequence of interviews, just something that is valuable to people. That could be a, you know, a discount on the product itself that you're only going to discount it for the first few days. Or if it's a SaaS app, maybe you get a lifetime discount for the whole time, or you get, maybe it's not even a discount. Like with Drip, we still charge the $49, but we doubled everyone's, you know, what they got for that $49. Cause I didn't want to be selling things for $24.50 a month, right? I wanted to hit that price point. And so there you can get creative with it. So number one, it has a reward. And number two, it's time limited. And without both of those components, you don't create the impetus for people to do it now, and people will procrastinate and not do it. So those are the two things that you're going to be communicating through this kind of process as you step through those 6 elements I said above.
For the reward itself, I'm not particularly a big fan of offering lifetime discounts or anything like that. I think there's a lot of ways that you can put yourself in a position to be providing more value as opposed to capturing less value from a customer for the entire life of that customer. So as Rob said, you know, with Drip, what they did was they gave away the ability to send more emails. But there's other ways that you can do similar things as well. Like you can do personalized onboarding or coaching sessions, for example, on how to get the best use of the product or help them integrate it into their systems. And that actually serves two different purposes. One, it helps get them into this, into your software. And it also allows you to have those direct one-to-one conversations with them to help you learn more information about how they're going to use the product, when they're going to use it, how often, and help you to better craft your future marketing messages. So yes, it is time out of your day that you're going to be spending with them. And it will probably chew through at least a month, if not several months worth of the quote unquote profit margin for that. But it does give you the additional benefit of learning from that experience to be able to apply it to the future for the product.
So let's talk through this kind of 5 email sequence. And again, you know, you can adapt this to be 3 emails, you can adapt it to be 7 emails, but we'll just talk through the 5 and kind of what is in each one and when they're sent. And I should say the first time I used this kind of structure, I was kind of flying blind and I didn't know what would come of it. It was 2007 or 2008. And then over the years, it wasn't exactly the structure. I've honed it based on feedback and based on results. So this is a, you know, a lot of people will use this formula these days, but there's kind of been a, you know, a lot of us for what, 10 years now trying to hone this thing and get it better. So I will say that this type of sequence tends to convert better than it did in the old days, just because we've been able to improve it so much over the years. And it depends a lot on your copywriting and stuff as well. Let me dive into the first one. Typically about a week before the launch day. So the launch window starts on the launch day. I'm going to use that term. And then I like to think of the launch window being 48 or 72 hours. With MicroConf, we do a full week because people are, it's a big ticket item and they're thinking about making travel plans and they have to check schedules. There's all types of stuff. But somewhere between that, I don't like to go longer than a week. So about a week before the launch day, you're going to send a teaser email. So this is information. This is a screenshot. Maybe it's a short screencast. You're kind of being vague about the release day, but you say, hey, next week, we're going to be launching this thing and here's what it is and here's the problem it solves. And you really get into kind of starting to build anticipation. And at this point, you want to let them know that since they're on the list, they're going to receive a special price available, you know, only to people who are there, but that it is going to be time limited. And this is where you can really dig into the problem the person reading the email has and kind of show that your product is the answer, or at least start doing that.
One thing to keep in mind before you start going down this process of laying out these different emails is make sure that you have an outline of all the different emails so that you know exactly what needs to be written and write it as far in advance as possible. The last thing that you want to do is be crafting these emails through your launch sequence. Or, you know, if you decide that you're going to launch on the 7th and you start them on the 1st, don't wait until the day before to start writing some of those emails, because it will either not get done or you'll not be happy with it. You won't have the time to go through them. So, you know, it's kind of a preface to all of these emails that we're going to talk about. Make sure that you do those things well in advance so that you're not waiting till the last minute, or if something goes wrong, you have time to tweak it.
You know, one other thing I forgot to mention about a good launch when I was talking about it above is if it makes sense, scarcity is the third thing that's really cool. So you have that reward, you have that time limit, but if you can add scarcity as well, and don't do fake scarcity. If you're selling eBooks, there's no scarcity. But if you are selling tickets to a conference, there is scarcity, right? Because there's only so many tickets that you can sell. And so that's what you're building towards with these emails. So the second email goes out typically one day before the launch. And this is where you provide social proof. You mentioned the money back guarantee. You're trying to remove all objections so that someone's already thought through the whole purchase. And by the time that they get that email on launch day, all they're doing is basically clicking the buy button, you know? So you build anticipation and excitement and you try to remove all the roadblocks. So you may need to touch base again on how the problem your product solves, but you're going to tell them, especially if there's scarcity, you're going to tell them the exact day and exact time they're going to receive that email and let them know that you imagine you will sell out, assuming you do. I mean, you want to say stuff that's true, but that you're going to sell out and that if they want to get in, that they need to get in early. And again, do true scarcity. Like if you don't have real scarcity, then don't do it. But I like to send this email out one day before because it's long enough that most people will open it before that, you know, before the launch, but it's close enough that most people will remember. If you send it out 2 days, it can get a little tricky with people 48 hours later kind of forgetting that this launch is going on. Also, I like to start my launches on Tuesday. And so if you go 2 days before, they're getting it on a Sunday. And I'd prefer to kind of be in their inbox on Monday morning. So the third email is your actual launch email. And like I said, I like to do Tuesdays. We've also done some launches on Wednesdays. And when we do the full week-long launches with MicroConf, we have done a few of them on Thursdays. I don't like to do launches over weekends, right? Because people just aren't on their computers as much. But on launch day, you're going to email the list. You're going to see sales start rolling in, and you're probably going to have your best sales day, at least for a while. That's the whole goal of this, is to kind of, you know, make your first several months of revenue, boom, right on that first day to really kickstart your motivation and everything. I've seen conversion rates on this launch sequence well above 20% of the list buying. And it's a big range. I've seen as low as 5% and seen into the 30%, which is just insane, right? It depends on the relationship you have with your audience. It depends on how big and warm the list is. Open rates play a big part of that. And then your price point, but it's pretty interesting. You know, if you can sell a few hundred customers on 20 or 30 bucks a month, not a bad way to kickstart a little bootstrap startup project that you've been working on for a few months.
One thing that Rob just mentioned about having the launch day on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and then not sending out an email 2 days before because that would come out on a Sunday. The other thing to keep in mind is when your launch sequence is going to end and when you're going to stop making that special offer. So the reason Tuesday works so well is because you can send an email the day before, and then you can have it that launch sequence last for 2 days so that people have that opportunity to get in until Thursday. One of the issues you can run into into is if you extend that by another day, what ends up happening is that now your deals are going to end on Friday afternoon or Friday evening. And by the time 4 or 5 o'clock rolls around on a Friday, people have just lost interest, their minds are elsewhere. And if you have a launch that is ending at like midnight on a Friday night, it is not going to work out so well. I have seen that happen where something goes out for a launch and it ends on a Friday night at midnight or Saturday night at midnight. And those don't go very well. So you have to be careful not only to avoid starting it over a weekend, but also ending it over a weekend. You don't want to do that either.
So the fourth email is the 24 to 48 hours after the initial launch email. And it depends, obviously, on if your launch is only 48 hours, and this kind of has to be at 24. But if you're doing a 3-day launch, maybe it's 24, 36, 48. And you basically, this is another excuse to communicate with them. And so you want to provide some value. Probably, you know, a good model for this is to send out an FAQ email, you know, of like, hey, we've gotten some questions and these are the questions and these are the answers. Because you're almost certainly going to get questions via email. And so you can compile those up and just be like, you know, I wanted everyone to have those. And it's really just an excuse to get in touch again. Remember, email open rates are not 100%, right? So maybe if you're getting a 40% open rate on your sequence, emailing multiple times will hit different segments of that. And you can make sure that everyone at least, you know, at least get some of your emails into their inbox. Another thing you can do with this one is to add some social proof. Again, you know, add quotes from people who got in and are really excited. And if you're selling any quantity, you're going to get feedback pretty quick of like, man, this is a really cool product. You can include more screenshots. And, you know, again, this is just, like I said, it's another touch point, but you also don't want it to be cheesy and feel like another touch point, right? I mean, you want to be genuine with it and have folks feel like that your emails are providing value. Because at this point, if they haven't bought and you keep emailing them, you're going to start getting complaints and unsubscribes if you're not providing value with the emails you're sending.
And that's why it's kind of important to make sure that you have an idea of what should go into that FAQ. And if you don't, then have the email itself written and then just kind of stub that piece of it out and then fill in the details of the FAQ with what people are actually asking. One thing to be careful of is, especially when a product is very early on, a lot of times, and I've done this myself, is where you don't necessarily know specifically what questions people are going to ask. So you kind of make some of those questions up. And depending on what it is, it can be obvious from the other side that those questions were probably not real questions that people were asking, and you were using it as an excuse to put something in the FAQ. So do be careful to make sure that you're paying attention to what it is that people are actually asking about. And some of those questions can even come from demos that you've done previously before the launch or to alpha or beta customers. So you can reuse those, but if you're just making things up completely, then it can be a little bit forced, I'll say.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like if you're faking it, people can tell. The days of these kind of cheesy internet marketer stuff working, they're rapidly coming to a close if they're not already gone. I mean, there are certain subsections, you know, people who are not as web savvy or not as technical or whatever, and you can say things and they'll believe it. But the folks you're likely going to be dealing with are going to be savvier than that. Like the bar has just raised in terms of transparency and in terms of people kind of knowing who you are and being able to recognize what's legitimate and what's not. So the fifth email in this sequence is the 24 hour before the time limited deal ends. And, you know, you could do one 12 hours before as well. Not in addition, right? That would be starting to get quite a few, but either 24 or 12 hours before, basically saying, hey, there's only a few hours left. And, you know, sometimes this day has almost as many as the initial launch in terms of sales. Other times it's just a trickle. The thing to keep in mind is, like I said, there are more complex variations than just this whole 5-email sequence, but this is definitely a pretty simple way to do it. It's a proven approach. And if you don't do this, you either don't send emails or you just send one email, like it's a 5 or a 10x difference. It's huge, huge variation. So I would recommend, you know, if you feel like 5 is too many, it's pretty easy to cut that FAQ email and then you're at 4, or you could cut the week before email altogether or the day before. You know, I mean, there's a bunch of ways you can vary it to what your comfort level is and the relationship you feel like you have with your audience.
And you can also go in the other direction where you send more emails. So instead of just sending one 24 hours before the deal ends, I've also seen a lot of people where they will send something, you know, 4 hours before something ends, and then 2 hours before it ends, and then 1 hour before it ends. But again, you do have to be careful about how many times you're hitting that list and whether, you know, that list is considered burned after that. There are lists out there where people will build the list and then do a launch of some kind to it. And after that, like there's no point in even having the list anymore. Maybe it's because it's an in-person event or something like that. But again, you will increase sales at the expense of the signups that you have.
Last thing to keep in mind is you know, email open rates, like I said, they're not 100%, right? No list is that good. So a solid list should be between 20 and let's say 50 to 60% open rate. So think about that when you're calculating conversion rates, right? Let's say you have 1,000 people on your list and you think, my goal is to convert 20% of those. That's good. I mean, that's a really hard thing to do if your open rates are only 20%. But if you're at 60%, then converting a third of the people who receive the email is actually much more, you know, in line with reality. So think about that and check out your list. Maybe even prune your list before doing this, if this is an ongoing list, to try to get a more realistic view and higher open rates, you know, and to get a more realistic concept of how many people you might convert during the launch.
One thing that can be a little difficult to figure out is when you're looking at the open rate, whether or not you're looking at, you know, a single email or whether you're looking at aggregate across them. So there, you're going to have people who open up every single email, and then you're going to have other people who open up one. So that's something else to kind of factor into what your calculations are as well. And I don't think it's worth getting too worked up over whether or not you reached a particular, you know, milestone or conversion rate in your head. But I do think it is worth paying attention to what your expectations were and how you can improve what that process looks like in the future, what things worked, what things didn't, and then be able to analyze those so that you could use them in the future for other either mini launches or other marketing copy. You can look at some of the different emails that you sent in the right after the launch was done and find out whether or not certain things probably resonated with people more than others. Well, JP, I hope that answers your question. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupstherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupstherestofus.com for full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.